Voice of Fintech.
Welcome to Voice of Fintech, a podcast mapping out the Swiss and global fintech scene, connecting fintech enthusiasts with startups, incubators, accelerators, business angels and VCs, and incumbents interested in partnerships. Voice of Fintech will help you navigate the fintech ecosystem. Here you can listen to the startup founder stories, what investors and incumbents are looking for when dealing with startups, and find out more about resources provided by incubators and accelerators. My name is Rudy Falad, and I'll be hosting this podcast. Hello and welcome to Voice of Fintech. Today we're going to talk to Greg Palmer. And if you have been to a great conference called Finovate in London or San Francisco, or you watched it online, or you went to Finovate Awards in New York, you probably remember Greg Palmer from the stage because he's the MC and the key organizer and presenter of Finovate conference. And I wanted to touch base with him because we finally managed to meet in London recently, and wanted to know what were the key takeaways from that conference, because a lot of things were happening, a lot of things we talked about maybe a few years ago maybe are not working out, and other things are working out more. So I just wanted to get a bit of a sense of where we are headed, because Greg is in the center of all of this, and we can learn a lot from him. So how are you, Greg? How are you today?
I'm doing great, Rudy. Thanks so much for having me on. And it was great to finally meet you in person in London this past Finovate Europe as well. We had a super fun session called Hot or Not, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later on. But yeah, it was a great show and happy to be on here to recap some of the developments that we see coming out of the fintech ecosystem.
Absolutely. Let's just rewind back a little bit. And for people who haven't been to Finovate, let's talk about what it is actually. And how are you different from some other conferences? What's your unique selling point or positioning? How you approach this? And I think the key word here is demos, but I'll let you explain that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Our claim to fame really centers around the unique thing that we have at our events, which is live demos of innovative financial technology. These are very short form demos. We give companies just 7 minutes on stage to show what they can do. And when we say live demo, we mean it. No slides allowed, no canned video allowed. It's very much a sink or swim environment. We want to see the actual technology working up there on stage in real time. So by coming to Finovate, attendees have a really efficient way to see a lot of innovations. You have this confidence that they're actually functional, as opposed to seeing a PowerPoint deck. Here's what I intend to build. It's here's what I've built. Take a look. And our audiences are made up of senior level bankers, obviously folks on the fintech innovation side of the equation. And really the beautiful thing about Finovate is just bringing so many senior level decision makers together in the same room and letting them bounce off of each other. The folks on our stage tend to be the founders of those companies as opposed to a salesperson. The folks attending the audience tend to be executives who actually have decision-making capabilities. And so by bringing all these people together, you get this hyper-efficient showcase of new technology for people who can actually do something with it. And that's what has really helped us be successful over the years. We had a lot of great energy on stage at Finovate Europe, and we had a lot of really influential people in the room. So that's, in a nutshell, what Finovate is all about. Of course, there's a lot of other cool content as well, but those demos really are the star of the show.
Absolutely. And how many people did you have this year?
We had over 1,000 registered, which is pretty strong for us with our London event. Up a little bit over 2023, which is really nice to see. A good crowd, for sure.
And there is another thing that came out of the pandemic, right? You record these sessions and then people can watch them after the conference, correct?
Yeah, so all of the demo videos are available. They've all been posted already at finovate.com/videos. We also have a online content portal called Streamly, which we share with a lot of the other events that are inside the Informa ecosystem. Informa is our parent company. They are based in London as well. Streamly is a terrific resource for people who want to see additional content outside those demo videos. But again, yeah, all the demo videos are up there. You can go and take a look firsthand at all of the innovations that were on display. And there were some really cool pieces up there. So hopefully people listening will take a moment to go and click through and find some of the innovations that may interest them.
Absolutely. So you already mentioned the session Hot or Not. Thank you for having me as well. And I was there on stage with a couple of other podcasters, and we had a bit of a game show, right, when we talked about what is hot or not in fintech. And then we had the participants of the conference in the room vote whether they agree with us or not. And I remember that most of the time they did, but there was one topic where they didn't. But what was your recollection of this? What were the hot or not topics that you remember we talked about?
Yeah, it was a really lighthearted game where we basically posed a subset of fintech and said, is this hot or not? And people like yourself and our other guests, Soraya Randhawa, Andrew Vorster, and Solène Niederkorn-Deschutes. I'm sorry for pronunciation. I don't really speak French very well. So Solène, if you're listening, my apologies. But we had everybody up on stage sort themselves based on, you know, whether you thought a given topic was hot or not. And very lighthearted game show in the loosest possible sense. We weren't really keeping score. But I think there were a couple of interesting places. Embedded finance was one of the ones we talked about. We talked about social impact, fintech, green tech, financial inclusion, pieces like that. I particularly like that one because we had quite a few companies on stage demoing green technologies. We had people looking at how you can make supply chains a little bit more green, cutting down on waste, cutting down on carbon emissions. We had another company who is looking at funding loans for individuals who are looking to make improvements to their homes to make them more eco-friendly, whether you're looking to add solar panels or redo the way around the house to keep your home from losing heat, making it more energy efficient. So there were some of those social impact fintechs up there. And of course, financial inclusion continues to be a really hot topic. So that was a fun one to see. I think the open finance one was the one where we maybe as a panelist disagreed with what the audience had to say. By and large, I think our group was relatively in the hot camp for open finance, but the audience maybe wasn't there with us, which was interesting to see. But it was a really fun segment. And we do have some video up on Streamly talking to some of those panelists after the fact, sharing their thoughts on it, which is a really fun one to go check out as well.
Absolutely. So great stuff. Great stuff that are, I think, a very creative and innovative way to do panels so that you don't go to yet another boring panel where everybody agrees with the other panelists. Here we try to disagree and disagree also with the audience, but in a fun way, lighthearted way, as you said. We talked about the crowd, the energy, the format, creative format, but what about the industry verticals that you were represented? So we could talk about B2B or B2C fintech primarily. Within B2B, are we talking about open finance or infrastructure or what else? What were the other verticals if we look at it that way?
Yeah, so primarily we saw a lot of B2B plays to the extent that people are bringing customers. At our event, it tends to be more B2B to C, right? Sort of selling through banks to get to their customers. I think one of the more interesting pieces, I'm going to take a slight deflection on that question, because I think one of the fascinating pieces that we saw actually centers around the company stages. And as you probably are all aware, fintech is always this ebb and flow. Who's getting funding? What stage are the companies at? And this year at Finovate Europe, we had the highest percentage of new companies to Finovate that we've ever had. New companies, first timers up on our stage, which is really positive given how the funding environment has been. It's no secret that funding levels are down across the board, and it's difficult for companies to get that working capital. What we're seeing is that is now a new cohort of companies who are coming out of this maybe tougher environment and bringing their solutions to the stage. So at a really high level, that's incredibly promising for the industry as a whole. We're seeing venture capitalists start to fund some of these companies, not at the level that they might have 5 or 6 years ago, but these companies are bringing new ideas to the table. And that's something which I think is really positive. The last couple of years have highlighted a huge number of problems in our industry. And so it's really heartening to see people coming in and tackling some of those problems head on. And I think there are opportunities that are out there in the space, right? I think the green fintech is a perfect example. There's a huge number of people who are really highly motivated to make these types of changes to their homes. And right now, they don't have somebody who's really offering them a good lending solution. This is actually an incredibly safe lending bet. And so we're seeing companies now who are saying, actually, there's a huge opportunity here to take these highly motivated potential borrowers, give them a product that really understands what they're trying to achieve and understands the collateral that you can get, because the actual home values rise dramatically. Here we have a group of companies who are finding this new opportunity, this new potential market to lend to, and they're going out and really getting after it, which is really positive to see. We're also continuing to see a lot of people who are focusing on younger users, younger customers. This isn't necessarily a new thing. It's been something that we've seen on our stage for quite a while, but there's this increased vigor when people are talking about it now as a new generation is starting to gain prominence and starting to gain wealth. This question now becomes, where is that generation going to bank? How can I get them to be a customer of my own financial institution in the middle of an incredibly competitive ecosystem? A lot of the people that are offering bank-like services are not actually financial institutions. And this is a real challenge for the established banks in the space. But again, there's an opportunity here, right? Whenever there's a challenge, there's the ability to come in and say, okay, there's a new group of customers. Nobody's really won that group yet. So can we be the ones who go out and really effectively capture that? We saw a lot of people talking about that on stage as well, whether it's from an investment side, a wealth management side, or even just a basic banking services side. So these are some areas, I think, which really should give everybody in the space optimism. These challenges are there, but also there's opportunities there. And we're seeing companies going right after those opportunities with fresh ideas and fresh technologies, which is really cool to see.
All right, great. So this sounds like Blue Ocean. At INSEAD, we talk about Blue Ocean, and that means how to go to markets where there are no sharks and how you convert non-customers to be your customers. But in any case, when it comes to industry verticals, you alluded to green fintech, to infrastructure. We talk about B2B, C perhaps, right? We talk about open finance and open banking. Anything new within that space, or do you see that the banks have now caught up with their technology debt that maybe some of them had a few years back with the help of fintechs, or not yet? Or are there new solutions in some other areas? So we are not talking about just core banking infrastructure, going to the cloud, doing a paint job of online banking, but do we change even more and becoming more modern and responsive to customer needs? Anything else?
Yeah. So I think one of the other cool pieces that we're seeing, and I think we probably need to talk about artificial intelligence at least a little bit. But before we get to that one, I think the rise of what I like to call meta fintech is something which we've seen over the last couple of years, which is basically fintech that enables banks to engage with more fintech. It's historically been very difficult for financial institutions to go out and get all of the tech solutions that they want because of limitations in the core service provider that they have, or because they feel boxed in by some of their other existing technology stack pieces. But what we're seeing now are companies who have really looked at that challenge and said, okay, we can make it easy now. We can help you engage with the new tech solutions that you want and go a la carte. You'd be able to go in and say, here's a provider. I want to take that provider and bring them in. And so this is, I think, a really cool piece. Now, I wouldn't say that financial institutions have caught up with where the general level of tech is from a customer service standpoint, customer expectation standpoint. There are certainly a lot of high-tech companies who offer better experiences than what most banks are able to do. But this rise of meta fintech is really promising because it provides a roadmap for companies to be able to go and engage with a lot of the technology that they wish they could engage with. So we've seen companies on our stage who are doing that type of thing as well. And I think the upshot is that it's never been more possible to get the fintech that you want. It's never been easier to integrate it. And so hopefully what this does is it removes a lot of those barriers that kind of are in between what people in financial institutions want to do and what they're actually able to do. So that's another really cool vertical that we're starting to see.
I see. All right. So here's a new buzzword for people, right? It's not Meta Group. It's not Metaverse, but it's Meta Fintech. That's great.
Yeah, there you go. If I just coined that, I want credit for it.
Exactly. It's copyright Greg Palmer. Now, that's interesting because a lot of people wanting to build B2C first. We've seen that, right? And then they realize it's difficult. So they wanted to change this to be B2BC. But that's also challenging because of the enterprise cycle and how banks are set up to deal with new vendors. So very often, consultants that were well known to incumbents were engaging with fintechs and then introducing them to incumbents. But what you're saying is now, instead of these companies, there are meta fintechs that can sit in the middle of new upstarts and the incumbents instead of these consulting firms that have been somewhat trying to help in the past.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly there's on the very positive side where it makes it possible to engage with new technologies. There is a potential danger here because it does create a new type of gatekeeper, right? For fintechs with new ideas, obviously making sure that you're in with some of those meta fintechs is going to be really important, that you're compliant with the people who can get you in front of a lot of financial institutions very quickly. This is, I think, the potential danger we have to watch out for. We don't want to create positions of power where people can say, have this ultimate deciding power, this thumbs up, thumbs down, is this fintech that we want to try and advocate for or not. But I think on the whole, anything that makes it easier to integrate new solutions, I'm all for.
Absolutely. All right. That's great. Sounds good. Now, following up on your very polite brush with AI, right? AI is now everywhere and people equate it with generative AI very often. But we all know that AI has been here since at least the 50s, because that's when the term AI, artificial intelligence, was coined at the Dartmouth conference. But since then, we had some ups and downs. We had AI winters, we had AI summers. And just like when you look at the buzzwords within the fintech world, we often had blockchain-based fintechs, right? That were not blockchain-based in the end. Then we had AI-based fintechs that were also not necessarily AI led in any way. So where are we today, focusing on enterprise-grade quality products? Where do you see the most advanced applications of AI? What areas?
Sure. Yeah, so I think this is one of those things too where you have to separate the popular culture definition of AI and the more relevant fintech version of AI. And this is something that we've seen this play out a couple of times in different areas. When people looked at blockchain technology initially, a lot of them were looking at news that was going on in the cryptocurrency space and thinking, we don't need cryptocurrency, so we don't need blockchain. And really, these are two fundamentally very different things, right? A cryptocurrency can be built on a blockchain, but it is not blockchain technology. And I think a lot of people were maybe a little quick to dismiss blockchain technology because in their minds, they had this association of it being tied up with cryptocurrency. A similar type of thing is potentially happening now where you look at the way that artificial intelligence is portrayed in a more broad sense. We look at ChatGPT, which is getting a lot of headlines. We look at people who are able to go onto image generators and say, give me a picture of an orange cat fighting Luke Skywalker in a Darth Vader costume. And the AI image generator can actually create that. And people sometimes look at AI and think, oh, it's a novelty. It's something which isn't really serious. It's not going to bring a lot of business capabilities to the ecosystem. What we're seeing is actually now that people are able to provide real business use cases for artificial intelligence. And there's a couple of really high-level industries that have been highly affected by this. And first, you have to talk about security anti-fraud pieces. It's no secret that fraudsters are using artificial intelligence to launch these massive attacks on financial institutions and really anywhere there's a payment process or anything along those lines. And by using artificial intelligence, fraudsters are able to be much, much more efficient than they have been previously. And the way to combat that, one of the ways to combat that is by bringing artificial intelligence into the other side. And so what we are seeing now is a big rise in artificial intelligence security plays, KYC plays. And the honest truth is that machines are able to sift through large batches of data more quickly. They're able to flag potential problematic transactions more quickly. And they're also free from the biases that sometimes impact human beings. A machine doesn't necessarily look at somebody's race or somebody's gender or the geography. They can look at other factors that can say, okay, this is potentially a fraudulent transaction. And now we're not quite at the point where you have this sort of cyber war going on where you have bad AI fighting good AI and the people don't actually need to get involved any longer. I could imagine a universe where we actually get there. We might be drifting that direction, but looking at artificial intelligence from a security standpoint, it becomes pretty obvious pretty quickly why it's something that you need to be engaging with. on the customer service side, there's also a lot of applications that go beyond the sort of basic chatbot application, right? And this is maybe the first version of AI and customer experience was a computer that I can type a message to and it can type a message back. And maybe that message is relevant to the question that I asked, or maybe it just directs me to another page and then gives me this follow-up question. Was that answer helpful? Which is a question which I always hate when I'm on the receiving end of it. Anytime you get the question, was this answer helpful? It wasn't. You wouldn't ask if you knew it was helpful. That's my own personal little soapbox there. If you go back and take a look at, we had a best of show winner called eSelf from Finovate Fall, who is using artificial intelligence to create human-like virtual agents, and look at that and say, look at where we are here. That is absolutely massive technology. It's very cool. So things like that, I think, are need to be paid attention to as well. So when I look at the future of artificial intelligence in financial technology, I think really the question comes down to a relatively simple one, which is, what are human beings bad at? And can a machine do those things better? And if we're honest with ourselves, there are a lot of things that still require human touch in financial services that human beings are actually pretty bad at. We aren't very good at determining credit risk, really. We have models that can help us. The individual human being is not great at assessing a credit risk of somebody sitting in front of us. A machine is much better. A human being can get frustrated when dealing with a customer who is, and don't get me wrong, customers can be frustrating. That's part of what they do. But there's places where machines can do that better. So as I look at the future of financial technology and the future of AI in that, I think, where are the places that humans don't do a good job? Can a machine do it better? And I think we're really still just at the start of this journey of finding all these areas that artificial intelligence really has a massive role to play.
Absolutely. So I think these are the jobs which have tasks which are routine, right? And routine doesn't mean boring, but it's something that can be turned into a code and machine can do it better, right? Exactly as you said. There could be large amounts of data that you need to sift through and a human would get tired if nothing else, right? Maybe, yes, humans would be subject to biases. The algorithms can be also, unless we fix it before we cement them again into an algorithm. But what we can do is we can be more efficient when we combine humans and machines, I would say. So I would look at big data analytics and automation, right? And that also then leads to other topics which are not favorite for many people, such as dealing with compliance and regulation also, right? So have you seen any examples in the automation space in general, behind the scenes? We talked about anti-fraud. So obviously that I would say is about predictions, customer experience as well. But what about automation of boring stuff so that we can do something more exciting at work?
Yeah, I think the compliance space probably is one that really should jump to the top of everybody's mind, as you just suggested there. That's an area where nobody, I think, really loves it. Maybe there are people who really understand it and appreciate it for the difficulties and the challenge that it can offer. But I think from what I've seen so far, and this there may be people who are past this now, but we've seen people who are able to use artificial intelligence not to necessarily stay compliant, but to flag instances where it looks like there might be a problem. Just saying, hey, we need a person to take a look at this. And by going through, sifting through massive amounts of data and highlighting those areas where there is potentially a problem from a compliance standpoint, it allows people who really understand the challenges to spend their time much more wisely. They can zero in on the specific areas that really require their attention. And on the potentially the biggest side of it of all is that you can avoid spending time on things that might look a little bit anti-compliant or uncompliant, incompliant. I don't know, whatever the word should be, not compliant, let's say.
Yeah, things that simple as
the false flags, right? Because there's things that a person might look at and say, oh, that looks a little bit weird. But a machine would say, oh, no, that's fine. You don't need to worry about that one. And obviously the technology needs to be there, because otherwise if you get that type of report, you need to be able to trust that it's correct. But by looking at it from that standpoint, there's massive amounts of time to be saved if you can prevent people from having to spend time and energy investigating things that actually a machine can tell you really quickly, no, that's normal. It might look a little sketchy for this reason, but it's actually okay. So that's where there's massive amount of gains to be made as well. And I think the important thing here is not necessarily replacing the actual human expertise, but allowing the humans with that expertise to operate more efficiently and spend their time where it's really needed. That's probably where the biggest gains are.
Absolutely. So that sounds great. Now, let's not move on from this before we talk about generative AI. I'm curious to hear what you've heard from your enterprise partners, from whether it's big banks or other financial institutions. How do they approach generative AI? Is everybody now spending money on it because it's in the media all the time? Or are they tweaking it for enterprise purposes? That's what I've heard from some consultants, right? So you can train these LLM models on data sets that are proven, so they are fact-checked, and the copyright is also not an issue, right? But the most importantly, that a data set that is being used for training this is fact-checked. What have you heard from enterprise partners?
So the people that I've talked to, and granted, it hasn't been a major focus in a lot of the conversations that I've had, but the people that I've talked to, I think still are a little bit hesitant to engage. And I think there's this element of maybe we all still feel like it's cheating, right? Like the idea of somebody else doing your homework. I didn't write that paper, machine wrote that paper, so I don't feel right taking an A for it. Now, there are probably people on the other side as well who think, oh, hell yeah, I'll take that A all day long. I didn't have to write that paper. I think a lot of people are still looking at it from the standpoint of how do I make sure that my employees are doing the work that they say that they're doing and not outsourcing it to generative AI, at least for pieces of it. And for a little while, you could tell there's these jokes that go out. Here is a commercial that was written by an AI tool. How funny is it? It's not really natural. Now it's getting better. And now you get to the point where you say it actually sounds real. And so this is, I think, the challenge for a lot of the folks in the financial services space is how can I take advantage of that? There are copywriting instances where people are generating reports for their, you know, key clients. Here is a AI created report of your, you know, wealth management breakdown for the last fiscal year. I can feed some data into it and have a machine put together a pretty well-written package and include some images and some charts so that you as an individual have a really good understanding of where your money is, whether your goals are being met and things like that. The other area which I think I've heard people talking about is with the creation of artificial data, which isn't necessarily something which you would use to create new products, but it's something which you can use to test things out. If I can create a real looking data set that's not actually real, all of a sudden I have this flexibility where I can try out a bunch of new tools in a very safe space, right? My sandbox capabilities have gone up dramatically because I can play with artificially created data that is very close to real data, but there's no actual customers, there's no actual PII in there. And so this gives innovators a really big leg up when it comes to testing their new innovations. From a wealth management side, you can back test how would my model have performed if, you know, X, Y, and Z had happened 10 years ago. So from that standpoint, I think it's really exciting. I think the financial institutions themselves will still struggle for at least a little bit longer to figure out where they can use generative AI outside of those kind of customer reports, customer facing pieces. So this is again where some people may be dismissive of AI. They think, I don't need Gen AI. It's not something that's going to impact our organization. We don't know how to use it. So I'm going to not use AI in general. And there's a real danger there because generative AI is only a small piece of what AI can actually do. It's a very visible piece. It gets a lot of attention, but innovators love it. And we'll see how that ends up shaking out. But hopefully what the financial institutions see are innovations that are brought to them that are a little bit more well-baked, a little bit less risky because people have been able to do a lot of testing on them already.
All right. That sounds great. Now, maybe let's try to borrow my crystal ball, which, yeah, you know I have, and let's talk about what you think will happen to all of these trends and the topics if you fast forward, say, 12 months from now. So whether it comes to traditional AI or generative AI or open banking, anything else, where do you think we are headed? Is the future only bright is the future only bright, or do you see clouds on the horizon as well?
certainly there are clouds on the horizon. I think there's cause for optimism. There's cause for worry. And it's really, I'm not going to say balanced on a knife edge, but there are a lot of competing factors going on right now. And I think looking at, let's start with the funding environment first and foremost. We know that funding is down and it's difficult to create new products when you don't have the same amount of working capital that you might need. I think we're at a point where we're going to start to see more funding going back in to the fintech ecosystem. There's a lot of dry powder out there. There's a lot of capital that's sitting on the sidelines as people who control that capital have been waiting to see what happens. You also have this situation where there's really high interest rates available in a lot of places. So if you've got a lot of capital, you look at it and say, I can go and put this in a savings account right now, and I can, without doing anything at all, without any risk at all, I can go and get 6%. And it's difficult to compete with that, you know, from an investment standpoint. Now, there are obviously big wins available for companies who are able to really go out and create something that will go and beat the world, as they say. But this is, I think, one of the biggest factors is what's going to happen from the funding standpoint. I think that we'll see more funding coming back into the space. I think that we won't have the same super tight purse strings that we've had for the last little bit. And as that happens, I think you're going to see more and more new companies being created. They're going to come out of this standpoint with a kind of a maybe more battle tested. A lot of them will have had to do more with less. And what that means is that they're going to be able to demonstrate a path to profitability more quickly. They're going to be leaner. They're probably going to be hungrier. I think the industry is about to get this influx of new hungry companies who are able to fight at a way that companies, that the startups maybe haven't been able to 5 or 6 years ago. I think that's the first thing that is really going to be interesting to watch. What happens to that funding ecosystem? The second thing, which nobody really has a good handle on, at least as far as I know, is where are customers actually going to put their money? There are clearly more and more options for people outside of traditional financial institutions. There are younger generations who are trying to decide, where do I want to save? Where do I want to invest? And it's looking like a lot of the more traditional financial institutions aren't that attractive to them. So this creates this big question: who is going to offer those basic banking services to these groups? Who's going to offer wealth management? Who's going to have the assets under management, basically? And we are right about to start getting a lot of good data as an answer to that question, as the millennials get more wealth, as Gen Z gets more wealth. So this is probably the major thing to watch. Is the traditional banking model still one that is attractive to customers? Or is it going to be people creating their own financial institution by grabbing services from different places? I'm going to have, instead of a checking account, I'm going to have money in Venmo. I'm going to grab my investments from this place. I'm going to have a different savings account over here. And people can build their own bank by providing or by combining services from a variety of different service providers. And this is going to be something which is going to take a lot of getting used to. It's going to really disrupt the industry. And I think the honest truth is nobody knows at this point who is going to be a big winner. Will it be somebody like Amazon coming in and taking over some of those financial services? Will it be someone like Apple, who already has this trusted relationship with so many consumers all around the world? Or will it be a major financial institution? We don't know. So that's, I think, the other really big X factor to watch out for. Things are going to shift dramatically in the next 10 years. The question is really, how are they going to do that? And until we can get a good handle on what individual users actually want, we won't have an answer to that question. And we're going to have to just wait and see. They'll start voting with their wallets here over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. So let's compare notes in 12 months from now and see how right or not you were in 2025.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Look me up on this. Let's see. I'm happy to stand by this. Will interest rates drop? Oh, I don't want to offer a prediction on that one. But will we see more funding? I feel pretty confident that we will see more funding coming into the space and more new startups, which, again, should give people cause for optimism overall. It does mean that there will be some incumbents with some battles to fight.
Absolutely. So sounds great. So before I let you go, I just wanted to hear a little bit more about the upcoming Finovate editions, right? So we know about your event in San Francisco, or you call it Finovate West, or you call your New York event Finovate Awards and things like this. Any other activities in between? How does it all look for you for the rest of the year?
Yeah, we have Finovate Spring coming up in San Francisco. That's the one in May. That'll be May 19th through 21st. And then we'll be back in New York for Finovate Fall, which is our flagship event in the financial capital of North America, if not the world. I don't want to get into a political discussion, but it's a big show. We do have the Finovate Awards going on right now as well. Obviously, on our stages, we recognize a lot of the companies who are building new innovations. The Finovate Awards is a more broad recognition a sphere where we are able to highlight people who are doing impressive work. Maybe they're not building products. Maybe they're just bringing them to the market in a way that is really effective and really useful. So slight difference in the content there, but the Finovate Awards, we're now taking nominations for those. That nomination window will be open through the end of May. So time still to get involved there. And of course, as I mentioned, Streamly is another place where you can get that year-round content. There's a fintech section up there, which isn't entirely the Finovate team, but we certainly contribute quite heavily to it. So a couple of different ways for people to get engaged. And of course, listen to the Finovate podcast, not to promote my own podcast on your show, but that's another place where you can listen to me. I've got a weekly podcast that comes out every Wednesday. A lot of ways to get involved. If you have questions on any of it or are interested in getting involved, you can always reach out to us at info@finovate.com.
Fabulous. So thank you so much, Greg, and good luck to you and Finovate.
It's my pleasure, Rudy. Thanks for having me on, and I look forward to seeing you for the next Hot or Not session next year.
Perfect. Thanks so much. Thank you for listening to Voice of Fintech podcast. If you haven't already, check out also voiceoffintech.com, where you will find all the episodes and additional resources related to the podcast. You can also subscribe to Voice of Fintech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or any other podcast app that you like. If you have any suggestions on the topics or guests or how to make this podcast better for you, please email us at info@voiceoffintech.com. Happy to hear from you. Thank you.